But it's not too often that the Financial Times of London dedicates much of its focus on a South African company. But indeed, it's done that this morning. Three stories in the FT, our partners there in London, focusing on Anglo-American, the 107-year-old South African behemoth being, put into play by a bid from the big Australian BHP Billiton. It's not the first time the Aussies have raided South Africa for its jewels. It did this with Glencore, which became Billiton some years ago. And we'll be talking to our go-to man on mining, Peter Major, to find out what gives. Well, good evening, your time, morning, our time, Peter. We've tracked you down to Idaho. What are you doing over there at the moment?
Hey, it's not all just about gold and diamonds. You know, it's also about silver, Alec. I can't say we're the silver capital of the world anymore over here, but it's still the world's richest, deepest silver mines.
Idaho is in the northwest corner of the United States of America.
That's right. It's quite a ways from the Iowa that you always go to.
Aha, yeah, from Warren Buffett's territory. So Omaha is quite a way from Idaho. But Peter, it's not often that Anglo-American it's inconceivable, in fact, that Anglo-American would be on the block, would be an attempted purchase especially by a company that was much smaller than it not like that long ago. But yesterday in my conversation with Piet Viljoen, he said it's a reflection of South Africa's difficulties. On the other hand, perhaps it's not just the opportunistic by BHP to come and try and buy Anglo because of the low share price, but because we are on the verge here in our country, possibly, of a big turnaround. We've got coalition politics coming in after May the 29th, and perhaps that's what's motivating Melbourne to say, well, let's get in now, let's grab them now before Anglo does come back to its former glory. Or am I just being way too optimistic?
No, I think you're pretty close. Alec, if you look at where Anglo's is trading relative to the S&P 500, you know, that's a world-class benchmark. And it's trading the second lowest it's ever been up until literally yesterday. And so I think BHP saw, here's a company similar to us, a little bit smaller, you know, a lot smaller, but it's got great assets that would be synergistic with ours. And we're not going to get a chance to get it much cheaper. And people forget how well Anglo performed from inception right up until 2010. From 1960 to 2010, Anglo's beat the S&P by 400%, by four times. You know, had you invested in 60, 61, rode out the cycles, you did amazingly well. It was a Leviathan. You know, when I went there in 1980, 81, people were seriously worried about Anglo's cornering the world mining market. I went to the Northwest Mining Conference for graduation. That was in October, November 1981, 2 months before I got on the plane to come here. And boy, Anglo's was the talk. Gold was coming down from 800. It was still around 600, maybe 550. And Anglo's was explaining how they were drilling 3-4 kilometers deep to pick up the carbon leader reef that was maybe 1 or 2 inches thick. And hell, Minorco at that time was the largest investor in the United States. And Minorco was just the overseas arm of Anglo. So that's where it was. And it's not just history. Anglo's has always had good assets. And whether you want the ones in South Africa or not, is irrelevant. Their overseas assets, on the whole, are very good.
So what is the rational response from an Anglo shareholder today to BHP Billiton's offer that pretty much everybody is saying is just an opening bid?
Alec, I haven't spoken with the government on this yet, but I have a hunch this is one of the few times Peter Major, the South African government, and the trade unions are probably perfectly aligned. We don't want Anglo's to disappear. It's a fantastic portfolio investment, as was De Beers. all of us had De Beers and Anglos in our portfolios. And sometimes you wanted to have overweighting and sometimes you wanted to have underweighting. But to me, the perfect analogy here is the average fund manager is like a kid with an axe and he's chasing a golden goose. He knows it's going to lay an egg every day, but he wants to get two eggs so he can beat everybody else today. He'll worry about tomorrow when tomorrow arrives. And so your average fund manager and definitely your average trader, they could give us stuff. They'll sell Anglos today for the highest bidder, just like they did De Beers, fully realizing they will never see it again. It's gone forever. And I fought as hard as anybody when De Beers wanted to delist to keep it on board. And we can look at some of our trusted fund managers who sold the family jewels for what? A quick buck? And you can start with Old Mutual. And I name a few others. And who did that really benefit? Sure, we made a couple extra bucks that day. And the next day, De Beers was gone forever. And the same thing's going to happen with Anglos if the shareholders agree to it. But I don't think the majority of shareholders are going to agree to a takeout. And I certainly don't think the big holders like the IDC, the PIC, and I'm hoping there's a couple large fund managers out there that see further than the end of the day.
What can the South African government do to block this, though? We've already heard, read in the Financial Times, that Gwede Mantashe has said BHP didn't do well by us with the Billiton deal. We certainly don't feel very warm and fuzzy towards them. So as a South African government, BHP is on the wrong side to begin with. But what can the South African government, if anything, do to block a deal like this, given that Anglo is listed in London or headquartered?
Well, that's the big difference, Alec. This isn't a case of Walmart coming into South Africa and taking over Mackerel, where government just laid down rule after rule, condition after condition, term after term. This is an overseas company that has a couple assets in South Africa. And what's going to stop? You saw BHP. They said, our bid is based on Anglo's selling or unbundling their South African assets. Now, we saw that with Thungela, right? That was Anglo American unbundling its coal assets. There's no law against that. In fact, I think it made a lot of people rich. But there's a reason you've got mining houses. Commodities are volatile. Ernest Oppenheimer figured that out he figured it out where his Rhodes didn't. Had Cecil Rhodes lived a little longer, he would have figured out, I got to put something else in with De Beers to counterbalance it out. And Rhodes actually was a founder of Consolidated Goldfields. So he was working in that direction when he died at age 49. Ernest Oppenheimer spent his life in diamonds up until 1917. Well, it was 1915 when he got chased out of Kimberley. He was mayor, the largest employer, and they started accusing him of being a German, and he got chased out, almost got killed, ran to Cape Town, was waiting for a boat. He was heading back to England. But his brother said, wait, before you go, come up to Johannesburg. Maybe we got to look at gold. So Oppenheimer started with gold, but he saw that without Rhodes, the diamonds weren't being managed properly. He took them on, and he no sooner had diamonds, he said, I've got to balance this portfolio more. I've got to get copper. And so these individual companies, Kumba, Amplats, Thungela, they're eventually going to wish they were in a mining house. They're probably eventually going to be in a mining house if they want to live.
And that is, from a South African perspective, the great mining house is Anglo-American. It still is very deeply invested here. I was looking through some of the data. 50% of the assets are in Southern Africa. And if BHP Billiton wants to come in and almost cherry pick the other assets, the non-South African assets, and then leave the rest here, where does that leave the country? Where does that leave Anglo shareholders?
It's up to Anglo shareholders what they want to do. Do they want to take this? How can government prevent it? Look, this government's got a hell of a lot of power. You know, this is a more centralized government than the previous regime 30 years ago. the PIC can go in there and they can buy up shares because their vote counts. The IDC, they could do it in alliance with a few big institutions. Now, if our government had good relations with overseas investors, they could have talks with them saying, let's do something about this. But I don't know that our government has very good relationships with overseas investors. I think it's the opposite, Alec. I think they've gone out of their way to, I don't want to say the word piss off foreign investors, but as people Ewan says, yes. Yeah, that's what they've done. And see, now they need foreign investors. You know, now they need to be on good terms with some large merchant banks. And that's how companies grow. That's how Anglo-American grew. They were on good terms with everybody. The Swiss, the Germans, the French. That's where all that money came in to build these gold mines. I think our government's slowly learning that, but not fast enough. They need allies here if they want to preserve what was a pure South African company that built this country like nobody else, nothing else, employed 1 million people. And those were good, real jobs with perks, benefits, blue sky futures. So government must look in the mirror and see what they've just about completely destroyed and say, is it worth us trying to save it? It'll never be what it was with what we've left, but we can preserve it and make it better than it is now.
Well, at least Gwede Mantashe's immediate reaction was one of, we don't want this deal to happen. So that it's a starting point. But I'm reminded here about what the Australians did to Wilson Bailey Homes, South African construction company. Wilson Bailey had about 50% of its assets, of its revenues, being generated in Australia by its Australian construction arm. And it's relevant here because BHP Billiton, of course, is the big Australian based in Melbourne. And the Australian government refused to allow Wilson Bailey to sell its construction company to the Chinese. Had it done so, Wilson Bailey shareholders would have been rich. Everyone would have been happy. But that business, that large business, went bankrupt as a consequence of it not being able to be sold to the Chinese. Now we have a situation here in South Africa where an Australian company is effectively raiding a South African national jewel in many ways. It's been around for so long. And our government should just stand by and let it happen. Surely what's good for the goose, and you mentioned the golden goose to begin with, is good for the gander.
Well, government's job is to protect the national interest, to do what's in the population's best interests. And I know they haven't done much of that in 30 years that I can see, but it's never too late to start. And there's a lot they can do. They can't, as we said earlier, they can't pull what they did on Walmart coming in to take over Macro, you know, and just load it with more and more conditions. But they can appeal to the shareholders that they currently are responsible for, the PIC, the IDC, a few other government peristatals, the unions, you know, National Union of Mine Worker, their pension fund. And they can still talk to parties overseas that are large holders and say, do you really want to see this disappear? Because it's a very unique asset. What it doesn't do, unfortunately, anymore, Alec, is grow local industries. When I went to the Anglo 100-year anniversary 7 years ago, you know, huge, large tent at Verkhalegen Wine Farm, there must have been 40 tables there. Each table had at least two, maybe three, head of Anglo companies. You know, Mondi, I can't even remember the ones at my table. You know, I think two out of the three at my table I didn't even know. And all those people, all those CEOs were battle-hardened veterans that were top-notch managers, you know, good financial CAs, good legal background, good mining background. And that's what Anglo-American did. And Nicky Oppenheimer gave a very nice, very short speech. He could have gone longer to say, our job here was to build businesses. We started out building mines, and we ended up building more than mines. And boy, did they. And why would any government want to tamper with a company like that. You know, what an engine for the country it was. And unfortunately, Anglos hasn't been doing that. That's why a lot of the reasons it's smaller is been unbundling all those children that it raised, and they grew up and they matured and did well. But the other reason is they've stopped growing. You know, they've closed many more mines here than they've opened. And that's not the Anglo that we knew. That's not the Anglo that grew this country and raised its living standards for everybody.
It seems almost like a Greek tragedy, all of this, because the South African geography still has, as we've discussed many times in the past, fantastic minerals under the ground, but they aren't being exploited because the laws that regulate them and the processes are just not incentivizing anyone to exploit it, particularly not your big South African being Anglo-American. So if you could advise the South African government on how to turn this around, how to get back to having a champion that employs a million people in the country, how would you do that?
Geez, it's easy, Alec. Do you know how many times Amcol applied to the government to get a power generation license so that they could burn their duff, so they could burn their tailings dams that were full of the fines that couldn't be transported? Can you imagine that government giving them the go-ahead, build your own coal-fired power plant using the latest technology, the clean, efficient technology, you know, raise your boiler efficiency. Can you imagine if government had let the Iron Ore Consortium, not just Anglo, the Iron Ore Consortium and Manganese Consortium take over the Soldanna Railroads? You know, that's what Rio Tinto, BHP, and Vale have done. And look what they do to the port and the railroad. You know, they double, then they triple their iron ore production. All that money comes in the country. And let the coal producers take over the Richards Bay line, not just the port, but the line as well. You know, this government doesn't have to do anything except take their hands off the wheel, because what they're doing, they got a death grip on the wheel and they've cranked it to the left, and that's going over the edge. If they would just take their hands off the wheel and let the wheels go straight again, these aren't big things. And yes, throw out the MPRDA, because there's no other country that has anything like it, and there's no other country that likes it. Because it's illogical. It doesn't make economic sense. It doesn't make ethical sense. It doesn't make moral sense. And what I say, there's four or five big things. Hell, we'll be up to 9 or 10% growth, like Rob Herzog says, by the end of the first 12 months.
What is the MPRDA, for those who don't know?
That's the Minerals, Resource, and Petroleum Act. And hey, I'm glad you brought that up, Alec, because it was leaked out by the infamous Trevor Manuel in 2002, around June, just as I was going on holiday. It was leaked out, and our mining index fell 35%. Because what did it say? We're going to nationalize the mines. Less than 10 years after Mandela got on the parliament steps to say, we will not nationalize the mines, they did an about face, and they nationalized the mines. But Trevor said, hey, this was only a discussion document. But 2 years later to the day, the real document came out, and it was just like the discussion document. Okay, that time, I think Anglo's only fell about 25%, and it took it 2 years to get back up, and that was in a raging bull market. So that's what the MPRDA did to this country. Foreigners could see. Hell, they're nationalizing assets. They're throwing in a thing called BEE. It is uninvestable no matter how high the raging metal prices go.
And that's 20 years ago, and here we have the consequence. So from your perspective, Peter, Anglo-American should not be allowed to be bought by BHP Billiton. It should be turned around. The government can do it simply by taking its hands, its death grip, as you call it, off the wheel, and it will benefit and grow and address many of the issues that the South African economy is facing at the moment. Am I summarizing it well?
Yeah, very good. I'd like to see Gwede and Cyril get on the podium together and appeal to all shareholders. Please don't accept the bid. We are going to make this place investable again. We're going to get off the shackles, the horrible legislation that prevents people from investing here. We're going to encourage foreign investment, something we haven't had for 20 years. And that would give people reason, hey, let's hang on to the Anglos, because it can go, that thing will go from 600 to 800 to 1,000 if you get the shackles off of it.
And if you don't do it, the Australians will be owning this asset. South Africa's
they'll hack up that goose,
company.
Take out two golden eggs, and the goose is gone forever. And you can put BHP in your portfolio, and that's it.
Peter Major is our man on mining. Your company is called Mergents, Peter.
Modern Corporate Solutions. We had to have a name
change. I always get
that
one wrong. So let me get that right
now. Just to bring us up with the times, from Mergents to modern.
From Mergents to modern. Modern Corporate Solutions. He's busy all over the world, but primarily in Cape Town. Now he's in Idaho. Where in Idaho, Pete?
Kellogg, Idaho. Home of the richest, deepest silver mines.
Okay, looking after silver there. Hopefully you're going to be doing a lot more work in South Africa if Gwede and Cyril just listen. Just take the cotton wool out of their ears, put it in their mouths, and don't let this national asset disappear. That's the message from Peter Major, and I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.